Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It's TV legend Henry Winkler. From Emmy Award-winning actor, author, comedian, producer, and director Henry Winkler comes a deeply thoughtful memoir of the lifelong effects of stardom and the struggle to become whole. Henry launched into prominence as the Fonz in the beloved Happy Days, has transcended that role that made him who he is. Brilliant, funny, and widely regarded as the nicest man in Hollywood. It's true, though he would be the first to tell you that it's simply not the case and that he's just grateful to be here. The new book is called Being Henry, where he shares the disheartening truth of his childhood, the difficulties of a life with severe dyslexia, the pressures of a role that takes on a life of his own, and the path forward once your wildest dream seems behind you. Henry has endeared himself to a new generation with roles such as adored shows as Arrested Development, Parks and Recreation, and Barry. And to talk about it all live in the studio is my friend, Henry Winkler. I cannot tell you how great it is to see you in person again.
Nice to see you.
It's so nice to see you, and I can't...
We just flew in from Boston, got off the plane, had Eggs Benedict. I'm now here at the microphone.
Here we are, and happy birthday to you. Another year around the sun for you.
Truly.
Yeah.
I'm very close to now, and you can see I'm very comfortable with it.
I saw you talk to Colbert, he asked what year this was, and you said it was 2023. Which was brilliant, by the way. Keep that low. And did Stacy make you a chocolate bundt cake?
No.
No.
That is made by a friend of ours.
Oh, nice.
Ricardo. He makes a great bundt cake. Stacy usually gets me. There is a bakery in the valley, on Reseda Boulevard, off of Reseda Boulevard, called Bee's Bakery in L.A. One of the best bakeries.
Oh, that's great.
And I have black and white cookies from there.
Oh, nice. Okay.
They're great.
Okay.
Black and white cookies. And she usually has a cake made of a gigantic black and white cookie.
Love
and that,
that
is my cake.
That is lovely. That is your chocolate guy. For sure, right?
I'm a chocolate guy, but yeah. I'm really enjoying the vanilla side.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thus the black and white. We were talking on the ride over here, like for most people, when they write a book like this, you did it in 9 months. It's like 10 years of therapy, looking back at every facet of your life. And you said, no, it wasn't.
No, it was not. You know, it was I felt the pressure of writing and a book that would entertain and maybe interest. I wrote it with a wonderful man. Now, I've written 39 children's novels.
Yes, you have.
With Lynn Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew how to work with a partner. And so I met James Kaplan. And I didn't know that I had to fly him out to L.A., put him up twice,
okay,
and feed him three times a day.
Wow.
And I want to just say the man is an eater. He's a big eater.
okay.
I mean, there's got to be a dessert.
Okay. Oh, all right. Okay.
And we talked for, I say, 70 hours.
Wow. Wow. And then he just took copious notes. Or did he?
And then he recorded.
He did. Okay.
And then he molded my stories, and I then deconstructed them. There were facts, or there was a joke, or there were people left out. And so then he would read back to me what he wrote. And then eventually there is a book and it's now out.
It's written very clearly in your voice though.
Yeah.
And that's what I was telling you. Like, you know, you tell stories, you find connections, you go back to stories. It's almost like having a conversation with you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I felt.
Thanks.
James Kaplan wrote the ultimate biographies on Sinatra, Irving Berlin. You picked a good guy.
Yeah. Oh, and wonderful man. And very thin. No matter how much he eats, he's still thin. I don't understand it. I keep letting my pants out.
Fair. It's funny. You write very early on in the book, who was I really? That's always been the big question. And it's taken me 50 years to realize that there was a me inside of me.
Yes, well, that came because I started to talk to a talking doctor, a therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have said this many times, but if I were to give this doctor a gift, it would have to be the size of a skyscraper. I so appreciate her. Without saying much, she just kept coaxing me toward answering my own question, finding my true self, which I'm still on the journey of.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a time when I literally was who I thought I should be. And the image just came to me that the bottom of my brain was soldered, shut. You know how when you have coffee or tea and you put a little cream in it,
mm-hmm.
the cream like swirls,
sure.
and then all of a sudden the entire cup is filled. My thought, though I know them intellectually, never swirled, never got into the rest of my body.
And you went living like that for yes. so long.
Yes, a long, too long, too damn long. I resent how much time I wasted being this kind of artifice.
So you almost wish you did that sooner.
I wish I could do it again.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I guess everybody does, but mm-hmm. I wish I had done it sooner. Because it would have helped me in every area. I could not have been Gene Cousineau 9 years ago. I couldn't have done it with the same texture.
Interesting.
The more you know about yourself, the more you know about everybody. Because we are all the same. And I'm just grateful.
But then looking back and writing the book, too, you talk about Gene. I mean, you had so many acting coaches and teachers in your
right.
life. You know, it was a great way to kind of bring them to the screen, right?
And in a few weeks, I'm going to, again, for the third or fourth year, Vulture.com has a big festival mm-hmm. in L.A., mm-hmm. and I hold an acting class.
Oh, that's great.
And I did it here at Northwestern.
Mm-hmm.
I've done it at Emerson College where I went.
Right, yeah.
I really enjoy that.
Sharing what you learned all these
years. And also
years.
Having the young actors taste something that they didn't think of in that scene they're showing me or in the monologue. That I won't let them get off the stage until they literally shift in the performance.
And how you become you and how you become an actor started very early on. I mean, 78th and Broadway.
My heart is in New York. My body is in L.A. Now, I've been there since 1973,
right.
September 18th. I swear that I think of myself as a transient, even though my children's are Los Angelinos, my doggies are Los Angelinos, my wife was born and raised there, our whole life is there.
My grandkids.
But, they are great. But I always think I'm just going back. I'm just here for
it's
a minute, and I'm going back to New York.
Henry Winkler, the book is Being Henry, and there's more with Henry next here on 720 WGN. We're talking to the legendary Henry Winkler. His new book is Being Henry, The Fonz and Beyond. You dig pretty deep into the book, even about your parents' background. Your folks
yes.
came here from Germany right at the beginning,
yes.
or about World War II.
Yes.
They didn't quite understand you. They didn't understand your struggles in school.
Can I just, I have to say this.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of not understanding. I really appreciate that they came to another country, learned another language. He started a business here, my father. We lived above our means. I had a nice life. Here's what I will not let go of. You have a child that child comes full blown. That child comes who they are. We have a wonderful friend who is a pediatric neurosurgeon. And in the beginning, he thought it was 80% nurture, 20% nature. He now knows, after all these years of practicing, it is 80% nature, and we have a shot at nurturing. They did not see me. They didn't look to see me. They didn't listen. They didn't hear. And I swore I would be a different parent. And, you know, your parents just sit right on your tongue, waiting to come flying out as soon as you're in a familiar situation with your kid. I would say, I'm sorry. It's not what I meant to say. I didn't mean to say it that way. I'm pulling it back. This is what I meant.
It's almost interesting that you say that, because you're watching your parents before you might even have kids, and you're already forming in your brain, I might not do that
I
that
way. I will not do that.
Yeah.
No.
And you learn good things and you learn bad things.
Yeah. I learned good things out of the house. And there are some lessons I took with me.
Yeah.
My father would always say in French, I have no idea if this is right, but that's what I heard. Le ton fait la musique. The attitude makes the music.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that
yes.
stuck with me.
I saw that. Yeah.
The attitude.
But sometimes when you're looking back at life, and you're very honest about it, you know, name calling, being yelled at, being grounded, because there was a significant lack of understanding of who you are, who you were, and what
now,
you were doing.
I understand that there was a significant lack in people knowing about dyslexia
right.
at that time.
For sure.
And that's great. I understand that. But you certainly know that something is wrong, as opposed to your child being stupid.
Absolutely.
You certainly know there's something wrong.
Absolutely.
Aside from your child being lazy.
Right.
You know, no kid wants to fail. You know what? I'm going to wake up this morning. I'm just going to be an idiot. I think I'm going to fail
right. yeah.
today.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a zero on my math exam.
Right.
That'll make me happy.
Yeah. But I think that gave you the fire in your belly.
It did.
You know?
Well, that gave me the fire, surviving that, and also struggling through dyslexia, not knowing what it was, and then trying to compensate for my lack. That gave me an ability to fight through to get what I wanted.
But you went to Emerson. You went to Yale.
Yeah, but I went to Emerson by the skin of my teeth. Yeah. I took geometry in the summer of 1963. If I did not pass it, I would not go to Emerson in Boston, the only college of 28 that I applied to
yeah.
that let me in.
Yeah. But I mean, even looking at that, Yale, you know, and you said Boston, getting kicked out of acting class, you couldn't memorize your lines.
Well, I thought I could get by on charm. And then I was in the repertory theater at Yale, you know, students got to be in the professional productions, in the professional theater at Yale. And my teacher, Elizabeth, came up to me and literally looked me in the eye and said, if you don't stop kidding around, I'm going to punch your teeth out.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, I think she's serious.
Yeah, right.
Then there was a man, one of the professional actors, in the Buckeye. We were doing the Buckeye. Very important with Andre Gregory was the director. Very long, flowing hair. And I was chewing gum. And he was playing the king. And as he walked by me, he stopped. The procession behind him stopped. He walked up to me and in character said, you do not chew gum in the presence of the king. You do not chew gum when I am walking by you. And I swallowed the gum. I'm still trying to digest it. And that was in 1970.
But you remember all these people.
I do.
That made an impact. And it's very clear in your book. It's very clear talking to you over the years about it, but it's very clear that there are just people in your life that you knew took you to a different level.
They did. Yeah. They did. But, and then I was open to listening as opposed to being defensive. I could be very defensive. And then I got to the point where this last season of Barry, Bill Hader directed all of them. Mm-hmm. They all went through his typewriter. And he had great writers around him, Liz Sarnoff. And Bill had a vision. And when he wanted something, he would let you go. But when he wanted something, you didn't say, you know, I have a different approach, and I'm really thinking artistically that you mm-hmm. just said, yes, Bill, I'm going to get as close to what you want as I can.
And that's respect. You were on the other side. You done producing directly.
I was now flowering and becoming more complete. When you're more complete, you don't need to fight so hard. You can just be.
So true.
You know?
Yeah.
And that, I think that is the umbrella of the book, is starting where I was who I thought I should be, and I am now getting to who I am. It is such a good feeling.
Henry Winkler, the book is Being Henry, and there's more with Henry next here on 720 WGN. We're talking to the legendary Henry Winkler. His new book is Being Henry, The Fonz and Beyond. You were doing stage, summer stock, improv, doing commercials.
Yes.
A couple of independent films came around.
Yes.
Crazy Joe.
Right.
Lords of Flatbush.
Yes.
Brooklyn, 1950s.
Right.
Sylvester Stallone.
I met this beefy, scary guy who talked out of the side of his mouth, you know? He was like, you know, hey, Lee would look at the people watching us film. He said, I'm going to eat you for breakfast. But inside, he was delicate, articulate, witty, so funny. And he is still a wonderful acquaintance now.
He is. $1,000, 8 weeks of work was what that film was.
Yeah.
And I know you have a great story of Sylvester and Rocky, because you've remained friends for all these years.
Yes.
But when Rocky came around, there was a script that came around to you and you gave him some advice.
He finally made it to California.
Yeah.
He comes to California. His car stops on Sunset Boulevard. He calls me. I'm not doing anything. I go. And there he is with his first wife, Sasha. And they have a bull mastiff, which this dog takes up the entire back seat. You need a snorkel in order to get into that back seat with all that slobber. I have never seen anything quite like it. Okay. And I thought he was going to have me for lunch, that dog. We unpack the car, we lock it. I take him to the apartment. He settles in, calls me up. He says, I got a script. I take it to ABC. I said, I have a little juice because I'm the Fonz.
Yeah, yeah.
And so at least they will pay attention to a request.
And a good thing to do for a friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I also know that I'm not, you know, just doing this for friendship. This guy is a talented man. I give them the script. They buy it. I go back to Sylvester. I say, hey, Sly, good news. Here's your money. Bad news, they want another writer. Henry, don't let them do this to me. Don't, I worked on this. I got to do it. I got to do my own script. I can't have another writer. I go back to ABC. I said, hi, everybody. How are you? Nice to see you. Listen, I really need that script back. Here's all the money. I'll just take the script. Well, we don't do that. No, no, no. I know you don't. I know you don't do that. But there's always a first time.
Yeah.
No, we bought that script. It's ours now. No, that is so true. It is yours now. What I would like is to get it back from you, and then it will be Sylvester's now. And finally, they said yes.
Oh, Yeah.
They gave me the script. Yeah. I gave them the money. I gave the script back to Sly. 2 years later, Rocky.
Yeah.
Oh, ABC.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
You had something there.
You had something.
You had something there. Back to 73, the Mary Tyler Moore Show, the Bob Newhart Show. Those were your really first big bounces into television.
What I could do, the Mary Tyler Moore Show, with my first audition. Now, my agent, Joan Scott, who had left New York, and the New York office was in charge, John Kimball was in charge. Joan came out to L.A. to start a satellite company, office, I should say. And she, when I first came to L.A., when I came right to her office with my suitcase, and she said, don't you want to get a place to live? I said, no, I thought you were going to send me on an audition. It doesn't work that way. Mm. You know, it's going to be hard to sell you. It's going to be hard to sell me.
Yeah, nobody wants to hear that.
Are you joking? That is a 3,000-mile, $1,000 mistake I've just made. First audition. I go to CBS Studios in the Valley where they shot Gunsmoke.
Yeah.
The Mary Tyler Moore Show, which was the Friends of that time. The producer says, I got one line. I don't have a script yet. I said, that's fine. He has a glass of pencils on his desk. I empty, just see, I can do in my professional life what I cannot do in my real life. I empty the glass of pencils, pick up a pencil. While he's talking, we're chatting. I clink the glass and say, excuse me. Don't bother yourself. If you get a moment, could I have the salt? Could you pass the salt? By the time I got back to my couch on somebody's in somebody's room at the Sunset Marquee, I had the part.
And you said they bounced you around because it was MTM. They would use you again.
Yes, they were very, very, really wonderful. If they found somebody they liked, they brought me in to be just a voice on the microphone in the airport, talking about, I think, when you know, your plane, if you're on flight 1250, yeah, it's gate 32.
You have such a thread of gratitude in you, because there was a reel that was done for Bob Newhart's birthday, and you wished Bob a happy birthday, and you thanked him for that role.
I did.
You did.
I did.
You remember those things.
I got the Fonz after I did Mary Tyler Moore, like a week later, my second week in L.A., and then they came and they asked me, would you do the Bob Newhart Show? And since I had very few lines on Happy Days and I wasn't needed, they allowed me to go and film the Bob Newhart Show.
Now, you say I was 27 years old, a short Jew from New York City with a unibrow and hair down to my shoulders, confidence about next to nothing in my life. The exception was when I was acting, which you just said. But that's when you knew you could soar, when you were acting.
Yes.
Yeah.
I somehow, whatever came into my mind came out of my mouth and my body.
Yeah.
Not so living. But I'll tell you, a big lesson that I learned is that when you're anybody who is listening who wants to be an actor and you go in to audition, they don't want you just to fill time and space, because most of the time they don't exactly know what they're looking for. So you have to show them through your imagination and your fearlessness. There is no right. There is no wrong. You have a 50-50 shot. You're going to get it. You're not going to get it.
Yeah.
Why not throw yourself off the precipice and just see if you can fly?
And sell it.
Yeah.
And sell it. It was a second pilot for Happy Days. You didn't do the first.
Not many of the
cast members did.
No.
They burned it off, I think, it's right. Love American style.
Right.
you started to audition and a voice that was not yours, you said, came alive.
There again, I walked in the room and I was overtaken. I just had this thought in my mind and I didn't think twice. There was a man named Pasquale who was reading with me the other lines. I only had six.
Yeah, right.
And he was standing, I was standing, and he said, "Are you ready?" And out came, "Do not talk to me that way. As a matter of fact, do not look in me, on my eyes. Do not look directly at me, or you will be sorry." And then I said, "Now I am ready." And we did the scene. I threw the script up in the air, and I left. And on my birthday, October 30th, 1973, Tom Miller called me and said, "Would you like to play this guy?"
And you developed that. A lot of that, the phrasing, the catchphrasing, it developed and came out of you based on what you were saying.
Yeah, because the voice freed me.
Yeah.
You know, Sir Laurence Olivier, the great actor, would not start a character until he took putty, makeup putty, and formed a nose that he thought was the character. And that nose unleashed him. For me, that voice unleashed me.
Yeah, it did. It did. And you've kind of taken that through all of your career.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah.
You have.
Now, I had a hard time when the Fonz was over. It was very difficult for me to be just a straight man.
Yeah.
Just being me, Henry. I was awkward. I was scared. If I did a scene, let us say my dream is to do a scene with Robert De Niro. If I were in a scene with somebody famous, I would be thinking, "Oh, wow, I'm in a scene with somebody famous. I better be good." I didn't think, "Oh, just do the job."
Yeah.
That is not somebody famous. That is another character.
Yeah.
There, I got caught up. I tripped all over myself.
Henry Winkler is in studio with us. His new book is Being Henry, and there's more with him next on 720 WGN. Dave Plyer with Henry Winkler in studio. His new book is Being Henry. Happy Days turns 50.
Yes.
Coming up. American Graffiti, Grease, kind of rocketed to fame. First season, you guys made it to number 16, dropped to the top 30. It was iffy.
It was not only iffy, we were almost canceled.
Yeah.
And Gary Marshall had the brilliant idea to go in front of a live audience. Ron Howard had never done that before. He had been in movies or on television since he was 3. He's now 18.
Or single cameras.
Never had done a play.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I saw wonderfulness. This young man did it in front of a live audience. You would never know he was scared. And it was like a duck to water.
Well, and they were screaming. The audience was screaming just with your presence, walking up to stage. And a lot of the other characters, too. But yeah. You, for sure.
Well, the Fonz was very popular. It was really great. It was a wonderful moment in time.
You had a windbreaker. Went away.
You can't be cool. You can't be cool.
Yeah.
Gary Marshall went to ABC and said, "You know, if he rides a motorcycle, he could be hyped."
Love your Gary.
You know, they said, when he's with his bike,
yeah,
he can wear leather.
Yeah. And you were a gang all unto yourself. And that's what he was trying to establish there.
Right.
You didn't need other characters to do it. You were a gang all of yourself. Cultural phenomenon, you were right off the bat. Went from a supporting player to one of the stars. The success and that visibility came quickly. I assume it was overwhelming.
You know, it wasn't overwhelming. It was mostly fun. And the reason it wasn't overwhelming is because for me anyway, there was an emotional component to dyslexia. I believed that I was less than because everybody said I was stupid. So when people would talk to me about how wonderful the character is, how wonderful they thought I was, they couldn't possibly be talking to me. Yeah. So I just heard the words, and it went through me like a screen door.
This I found interesting, too. You said your parents visited the set, and you said it almost seemed like they were finally proud of me. But the truth is, I didn't care. It was too late. They weren't proud for me. They were proud of me.
Well, they were proud because it enhanced who they were. You know, all of a sudden, they were the co-producers of Henry Winkler.
Right.
You know, I needed them to be the co-producers of Henry Winkler when everything was completely kablooey.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I didn't need them to be proud of me when I figured out how to be successful.
No, and they're your parents, and that kind of messes with your head a little bit.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
But the joy you came out with that show and the people that you worked with and met, Ron and Mary.
Well, they're
Ross.
All still friends. I just
they
saw
are.
Don Most.
Yeah.
He now lives in Boulder, Colorado. And our children's book, our 39th children's book, came out like 16 days ago.
Yeah.
Detective Duck.
Yeah.
And I was on tour for The Duck.
Yeah.
And Donnie and his wife, Morgan, live there in Colorado.
Yeah.
And I got to see them.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
A lifelong friendship.
Yeah, lifelong friendships, yes.
But during the time that you were doing, there were struggles, right? I mean, you know, you talked about in the book, which so many great stories in this book, and we're just touching a few of them here. You got a video cassette recorder in 76. Nobody had a video cassette recorder.
Right, and three-quarter.
Yes.
Three-quarter, remember.
Yeah.
So these are the very biggest tapes.
Massive.
These are professional tapes.
Heavy.
I got it for Christmas.
From ABC.
And other people in the cast got a wallet.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that it was not all equal.
Yeah.
So when I was asked what I got, and they stacked it up against, it was, oh, we are not as respected, then it really hurt a lot of people's
horrible
feelings.
Horrible feeling. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, they wanted to call... they wanted to change the name of Happy Days, and I said, "Look, if I have anything to say, if you're going to listen to me at all, it would be so damaging. I live because of this family. I am successful because I am in the midst of these incredible people. If you change it to Fonzie's Happy Days, years after we have been on the air and it's been Happy Days, it would be such a smack in the face. I don't think I could live with myself."
Best friends, each other's godparents. I mean,
yes.
Close relationships.
Yes.
But you later say that ABC's rudeness turned Ron into a billion-dollar director.
Well.
Because he left at some
he
point.
He finally said, you know what? I don't feel as if I have to come back. And he always wanted to be a director.
Yeah.
He talked to me over the years about, do you think I can do this? And knowing Ron, you know there is nothing he can't do.
Yeah.
Except he did tell me that he did open a drawer in his house and there was a mouse, and he just closed the drawer and walked away as if nothing had happened, and he let somebody else will take care of that.
Somebody's got that.
I can move a team of 100 people making a movie. Yeah. I'm just going to leave the mouse where it is.
That's great. But I'll tell you, Gary Marshall kept everyone's head straight.
Yes.
By playing softball. It was a thing. It humbled you. It humbled everybody a little bit.
Well, I didn't play sports.
Yeah.
I have no eye-hand coordination.
Right.
I have a labradoodle named Sadie who has mouth-eye coordination like I have never seen in my life. She must have been on a soccer team.
In a previous life.
But she is a better athlete than I have ever been.
We're talking to Henry Winkler. He's in studio. His book is Being Henry, and there's more with Henry next on 720 WGN. Henry Winkler live in studio. His book is Being Henry. Jerry Parrish, Gary Marshall, had you produce or directed Joni Loves Chachi?
Eddie Milkus, Tom Miller, and Gary were standing on the street. And they were really intense. And I walked up and I was, you know, hey guys, how are you? What's going on? We can't find a director for the last episode of Joni Loves Chachi. I said, I'll do it. They went, okay. I said, I was just kidding. I was just joking.
If you don't ask, you don't get.
Yeah, really. But I really wasn't asking. Yeah. I just thought I was being flip. And then I got a red sweater. Jerry Paris wore red sweater every Friday night when we filmed Happy Days. And I got a red sweater, and that was my first directing job.
That's amazing. Amazing. And you directed Memories of Me with Billy Crystal, Smoky Mountain Christmas, produced MacGyver, The Sure Thing.
Smoky Mountain Christmas.
Yeah.
I got to direct the magnificent Dolly Parton,
yeah,
who is just so powerful,
yeah,
that you know you can't believe it.
Yeah,
you feel like you're in a windstorm, and she is this lovely, warm, talented singer, songer, musician. She plays, I think, 97 instruments.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love her niece, too.
And there's so many great stories in this book, and I want to give them all away. Meeting Paul McCartney, the experience with Robin Williams.
Yeah, now, Paul McCartney, do you think he's listening?
He might.
Because he gave me his phone number. So this is the Henry, the old Henry.
Yeah, yeah.
I meet him in the 70s on the street.
On the street, yeah.
He says, oh, the phones. And I went, oh, my goodness, Paul McCartney. Yeah. He gives me his phone number.
Yeah.
Let's get together.
Yeah.
And like an idiot, I call his phone number every 10 minutes for a day. Never answers the phone. Never called me back. So if he's listening by any chance,
call me.
I would just like to say hello again. You know,
it would be
fun to like get a ham sandwich together, you know,
ham sandwich. I love it. Oh, I love it. But the great stories, all great stories in this book. But, you know, toward the end of Happy Days, you rejoin Ron Howard in Night Shift. And I will say,
oh, he asked me to be in the movie. First time directing a major motion picture.
Yeah.
He said, Henry, the crew has been doing it for 25 years. I'm only 25. Are they going to listen to me? And he was really nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he is such a powerful being that when he would stop for a minute and say, let me think about that, everybody just got very quiet and waited for Ron to say what he wanted.
He commands respect. He does.
He commanded
respect. Yeah.
And then he said, you can play either role. And I thought, well, I've been flamboyant for 10 years. So Michael Keaton played Billy Blaze. And really, I played Chuck, who in my mind was Richie.
It was Ron, yeah, yeah.
So I got to play Richie, the complete opposite of the Fonz in that, oh, I love that movie.
Which was brilliant for you to do that.
Yeah, it was brilliant, except that people weren't ready for me to be so different. It was like I should have like gradually moved.
But now in retrospect, looking back.
I loved doing that movie.
Absolutely.
Loved every inch of it.
Funny, funny movie.
Yeah.
You have a chapter in the book that starts off, and it's really focused on your lovely wife, Stacey, that I got to meet.
Yeah.
And, you know, almost 50 years of marriage, but it was almost an interview with her in the beginning of that chapter of how you met. And you had said, you know, I never saw myself dating someone, marrying someone with another kid. And you kind of explained that whole story and knocking on the door for the first time.
Oh,
it's beautiful.
Oh, my God.
It's
well, you know, I was so crazy about being typecast that I would not call myself Fonzie, be anything Fonzie-esque. I take Stacy out for the very first time. We're going to the movies. I ring the doorbell and I look down and there is this four-year-old who goes, hi, Fonz. And I looked at him in my Germanic closed way. I said, my name is Henry. Would you like it if I called you Ralph? And he ran away. Didn't quite get what I was saying. And I thought to myself years later, what a moron.
Was Stacy anywhere in the vicinity?
She was.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Did you hear about it?
I heard about it yesterday. Okay. And Jed is 52.
Oh, that's great. That's great. But I love that part of the book, for sure. It just touches everyone personally. And I think that's what you said initially, is that's what you wanted people to get out of this book.
Here it is. If you get being Henry from the Fonz and Beyond, I want you to laugh. And I want that I said something in this book, one thing that you go, the reader, you know what? I can use that.
Yeah.
I can use that in my life. That sounds like that makes sense to me. Then I will have done my job. Then I can ride off with my silver bullet like the Lone Ranger.
And I think for me, and I mentioned to in the car, like for me, it was Henry 2.0, 3.0. Like I'm going through things myself where like I'm wondering what's next.
Yeah,
in my
but
life.
You know, that is a big lesson
that
I learned along the way. When I finished the Fonz, I was not being hired for 8 years.
No, a little lost.
So I became a producer.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to be a producer. So here it is. You can accomplish anything if you're willing to just be flexible,
mm-hmm.
to just put one foot in front of the other and try something you don't know you can do.
Yeah.
And you wind up, wow, that wasn't as bad as I thought. Wasn't as hard as I thought. Now, producing is a hard job, but I thought I would be able to do nothing. And I found what I was good at.
Yeah.
Other people did what they were good at, and I appreciated them, and that's how you got the show on the air.
And you bounce back. And you bounce back to...
You bounce back.
Producing, directing, but back to acting. I remember Larry Sanders' show, Scream. Coach Klein and the Waterboy in a longtime friendship with Adam Sandler.
Adam's brilliant, too. Yeah. See, that's another guy. So personally powerful.
Yeah.
You know, I say this all the time. He doesn't dress well. But you don't mess with him either. You know, but I love him so much. The other night in New York, I was interviewed by Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
And he dialed a number and held the microphone to his phone. And it didn't go through. And he was a little embarrassed, and he put the phone down. A little while later, the phone rang.
On stage.
He put the microphone to the phone. And then, where's this guy talking to me like this? I don't know. And I said, are you Jimmy Kimmel's Aunt Chippy? He said, no, it's Adam Sandler. And Adam Sandler called in to wish me well.
I love that.
You know, oh my gosh, it was a great moment.
But these veers into such different roles. Arrested Development, Barry Zuckerkorn.
Yeah.
Hysterical,
but also written brilliantly well.
Yeah.
You know, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage.
Dave Plyer with Henry Winkler in studio. His new book is Being Henry. Barry. Brilliant.
Barry.
Brilliant role for you.
Oh, I'm going to miss it so much.
I know. You won an Emmy, and I just remember you telling me this. You used part of the speech that you intended for Happy Days when you had your butt in that chair. It didn't get off that chair in the Emmys when you were nominated, and then at the end,
if you listen very closely to the announcer, this is Henry Winkler's 1,000th nomination. His first win, you know, but it's great. I finally made it into a necklace. And when I'm not, you know, too embarrassed, I wear it when I'm driving around town. I never am without that Emmy. People say, you know, it's in the bathroom. And I think that they are just full of it.
I think so, too.
You know what I mean? They look at that Emmy and they are really happy.
Really proud.
Yeah.
Yeah, really proud. When you are recognized on the street,
and
you've touched so many generations and so many iconic roles, you know, it's got to be a variety of things people say
but
to you.
But it's so gratifying.
Right?
And it's all warm. I am never met with anything but warmth. I was met on the streets of New York when Stacy and I were walking back from the theater by this gang of young people. And they backed us up against the building.
Mm-hmm.
And one said, "Holdy, were you the Fonz?" I said, "Yes, I was." "Hey, Rodney, back up. Give the man some breathing space. Would you like an escort to your hotel, sir?" I mean, it just turned on a dime. It was amazing.
The gentleman that closed your car door when I picked you up,
yes,
through the window,
yes,
gave you a thumbs up.
Yeah.
He did. It was a young kid. Young kid.
But look, you can also take all of this wonderful stuff. I now get to be the spokesperson for ICANN.
Yes, tell me about that. Yeah, I saw that. Tell me about that.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So Apelles approached me, and my father-in-law was, rest his soul, was my dentist. Tall, big mustache, funny, and unbelievable at what he did. Also loved being in the politics of dentistry.
Mm.
He was an ambassador and traveled all over the country for dentistry. And I literally watched his eyesight deteriorate. He had aging macular degeneration, which then can turn into GA, which is geographic atrophy. And I then get to say, go to your eye doctor. If you're feeling that your eyesight is like off, if straight lines become wavy, if there are spots in the picture you're looking at, you can't see a face, but you see the body, go to your eye doctor. And then there is a wonderful website called gawontwait.com. gawontwait.com. Do you know who called me? Honest to God, 2 weeks ago. Dick Van Dyke has aging macular degeneration. Saw my commercial.
Love that.
Called me up. I'm now talking to Dick Van Dyke on the phone.
I love that you're a fan too. I love
wanting
that.
Wanting to know, do I know something he doesn't about it? Can I lead him? And I said, sir, I am not a doctor. I only play one on TV.
but it's nice to use your celebrity to help other
people.
It
is. It's important.
Yeah. Yeah. You've done that all your career.
Well, especially, I want to say, now, in honor of Ed Firstman, my father-in-law, my dentist, who was great and treated me as if the way I wanted my father to have treated me.
Great respect for him for that.
Yes, great.
The great
Henry. And also really pissed me off. He was so tall. He must have had some of my height.
Okay, fair enough.
You know?
Fair enough. The great Henry Winkler, the book is Being Henry the Fonz and Beyond. What a tremendous read. Great picks that I heard you handpicked.
Well, you know, that's the great thing.
Yeah.
If you don't like reading, there are pictures.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know? Yeah. One of my favorites, aside from the family, is I got to meet Patrick Mahomes.
Yes, yeah, I saw that.
And I went on the field, and this behemoth comes running at me with this big smile.
Yeah.
He said, "I have a surprise for you." And he gave me his jersey signed, which I wore in my living room last Super Bowl.
That's fabulous.
And I know that that is one of the reasons they won.
Thank you for all of your time, my friend.
What a pleasure.
I
it's always
it.
A pleasure
always.
To chat with you.
Thank you, Henry. I appreciate it. The great Henry Winkler. You're listening to 720 WGN.